The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. After he had fed the people, Jesus made the disciples get into a boat and precede him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. After doing so, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When it was evening, he was there alone. Meanwhile, the boat, already a few miles offshore, was being tossed about by the waves, for the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, he came toward them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified. "It is a ghost," they said, and they cried out in fear. At once Jesus spoke to them, "Take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter said to him in reply, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." Peter got out of the boat and began to walk in the water toward Jesus. But when he saw how strong the wind was, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus stretched out his hand and caught Peter and said to him, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" After they got into the boat, the wind died down. Those who were in the boat did him homage, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
Today we have what I would call preacher's dilemma, because I love both the first reading and the Gospel reading. Both have been important in my own prayer life and my own spiritual growth. And the good news is for you, because I could preach an hour on each of them alone, the good news is there is a common theme. But in order to understand that common theme, we have to set the context, especially of today's first reading. Elijah was a prophet, powerful. We heard his name last week as the prophet, the one who appeared to Jesus with Jesus on Mount Tabor in Transfiguration. Elijah was tasked by God to bring the people back to him, but he was the only prophet left. And time and again, he faced his enemy, which was King Ahab, Israelite king, who had bought into the practices of his pagan wife and was, for practical purposes, a worshiper of Baal, who some of the practices of Baal were human sacrifice. Time and again, Elijah faced that battle. In one particular episode, Elijah had it and set up a contest, if you will, had the prophets of Baal, of which there were 500, and himself, one, all alone, set up altars, offer the sacrifice of an oxen, have it placed on that altar, but have the God who is God alone light the altar. And the prophets of Baal, it's a particularly lovely scene. They're dancing, they're screaming, they're ranting, they're raving. They're literally slashing themselves so that they bleed, so they get the Baal's attention, and it doesn't work. And Elijah on the sideline is taunting them. "Yell louder, dance harder. Perhaps your God's asleep. Perhaps he's relieving himself." And after hours of nothing, Elijah says, "How long are you going to weary the Lord?" And he sets up his altar. He has the people place the offering on the altar, has them pour water on it, more water and more water, and he says a simple prayer. And lightning comes and laps up, consumes the sacrifice, laps up the water, and Elijah says, "See, it is God." And he has a prophet's ball put to death. Of course, this is a good way to please the king, isn't it? And so now he's running. He's running away from the king. And he goes to the Negev desert. There he basically gives up. He sits under the broom tree and, "Lord, take my life. It's too much for me." And he falls asleep and an angel wakes him. "Rise, eat, or else the journey would be too long for you." He rises, there's cakes at his feet, and he eats them and falls back to sleep. And again, and Elijah then has the strength to go to Mount Horeb, where today's first reading picks up. And there we hear that story of how he did not recognize God in the wind. He didn't recognize him in the earthquake. He didn't recognize him in the fire. But in the still, quiet voice, in the Hebrew word is in the nothingness, in that quiet, and that peacefulness. Elijah had surrounded his life with all that noise, and he recognized that God wasn't in that noise, but God was in the quiet moment of prayer. He covers his head, he goes out and speaks to God. And unfortunately, that's where our passage ends. But what does he say to God? God asks him, "Why are you here?" And Elijah says, I am the prophet of the Lord. I alone am left. Everyone has abandoned you. And God tells him, go back to Israel. Anoint a successor for yourself. And Elisha is anointed. And anoint a new king. That I will provide for you what you need to bring the people back. That task that he had given Elijah, that God would provide. And then we turn to the gospel reading. We have Peter and the other apostles that were in that boat, and they were terrified when they saw Jesus walking on the water towards them. We know this is not humanly possible, that there's something different about Jesus. And Peter makes that bold proclamation, "Lord, if it is you," it's almost a challenge, "but Lord, if it is you, tell me to come to the water, to walk on the water toward you." And Peter understood that Jesus would have the capacity to give him that ability to walk on the water. Either that or was profoundly cruel. Or if, depending on how you are in practical jokes, profoundly funny, of the Lord to call him out of the boat. And Peter gets out. And thank God, Jesus had given him the ability to walk on the water. We wouldn't be telling the story. It would have been just, Peter would have drowned right away, or at least sunk right away. But Peter is walking on the water. The God had given him that ability to walk on the water, to answer the call of Jesus to come to him. But what happens? Peter, unlike Elijah, doesn't realize the grace in that moment, that he's listened to the voice of Christ calling him and making him able to walk on the water. Instead, he focuses on the wind and the waves, and he begins to sink. How far he got from the boat, we don't know, but we can surmise that it must have been some distance, because instead of reaching for the boat, reaching for his friends in the boat, he reaches out to Jesus, "Lord, save me." And Jesus picks him up. And I can't help but think, because he must have been some ways from the boat, I cannot help but think that Jesus picked him up and they had a conversation as they walked back to the boat on that water. "Oh, Peter, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? You asked me to call to you. You asked me to give you the ability to walk on water, and you were doing so good until you realized and took your eyes off of me. Don't you realize if I give you the call, I give you the ability as well?" That's all fine and good for Peter. It's all fine and good for Elijah. But what's it mean for us? I'll share another story. A few years ago, I got a call from a friend, and I could hear right away there was something he was terrified about. And with utter terror in his voice, he said, "I think God is calling me to go to Africa." "Okay, how do you feel about that?" "I don't want to go to Africa." "Okay, how does your wife feel about that?" "She thinks I'm crazy." "Great, I think you are too." He had no desire to go to Africa. He had no capacity to go to Africa. He had nothing. He had none. Found out later that there was something else going on. But for that, at that moment, we knew it wasn't of God. Shortly after that, though, I heard of a story of a man who did serve in Africa. And he said initially he had no desire to go, but all of a sudden he felt it in his heart to learn about the people of Africa, to learn about their culture, to learn their language, to learn about them. And through learning about them, he began to have a love for the people of Africa. And all of a sudden he realized that love called him to something more. He began to have a capacity to see himself, have the capacity to serve the people of Africa by going and serving in that community, whichever community it was, whichever country it was. You see the difference? My friend didn't have the capacity. And so we could tell right there the Lord wasn't calling him to that, at least at that moment. This other gentleman had the capacity. God had placed in his heart a desire for the people of Africa, a love for the people of Africa, a desire to serve them, had given him the ability then to serve them. God does that in our lives. He's called each and every one of us to a specific task that only you can do, that only I can do. And he's given us, each of us, the grace and the ability to do that specific task. And too often we're like Peter, or too often we're unlike Elijah, that we focus on the wind and the waves, or we get lost in the earthquake and the fire and the wind. And we let fear crop up in our hearts, which then blocks us from responding to God's will. Perhaps we need to be more like Peter once we recognize what a situation we're in and cry out, Lord, save me. Lord, save us. Give us that capacity to live in faith, to be like St. Peter and to get out of the metaphorical boats that we're in, the place of comfort and peace, to be able to walk with you, Lord, to be able to respond to your call in our lives and to accept that grace and the ability that you've given us. Only you can be you. Again, God has given us, each of us, a very specific task. It might be something as simple as being a good father or being a good mother this day. It might be as simple as being a daughter and son, a good daughter and son to your parents, or brother and sister, or reaching out to somebody in need. It's fine and good to think how Elijah was called to bring a whole nation back to God, how Peter was being tasked to bring the church and to proclaim Jesus Christ to a church that needed him, a church very initially that didn't know him. It's all fine and good to think of the big and major things, but for many of us, our calls are small, but no less needed, no less noble. God has given you the ability because God has called you.